Thanks for downloading this IMSA Radio podcast from the International Motorsports Association and Radio Show Limited.
It's for personal use only and must not be rebroadcast, reproduced, or used in any form without permission.
Checkered flag ends the race, but not the race talk. Have your say. Ask the experts. Make your point. Post-race tech. The end of the race is only the beginning.
Michelin post-race tech at the end of the Mobile 1 12 Hours of Sebring for 2020, which has ended the IMSA WeatherTech Sports Car Championship and indeed all of the IMSA Championship seasons. But the prototype challenge, Jeremy Shaw and Shea Adam with me in the Hagerty Global Broadcast Centre. Hashtag Michelin PRT. Let's start off, Jeremy Shaw, unofficially with the points calculations, just to put, if you will, just to underline what we've been talking about for the last few hours.
Yeah, just super tight in DPI. After nine races, Elio Castroneves and Ricky Taylor have 265 points. Ryan Briscoe and Renger van der Zander have 264. Jonathan Bomarito and Harry Tinknell with the win today will move up into third position on 260, so not far out at all. And they will move ahead, I believe, of Pipo Durrani, who will have 258 in the Manufacturers' Championship, of course, with Acura finishing ahead of Cadillac. That means that Acura will win the Manufacturers' Championship by a single point. So not a good day for Cadillac, unfortunately. They come in here, you know, with high expectations for the championship, for both championships, and it all went away from them. In the GTL, LMP2 was already won by PR1 Matheson Motorsports and Patrick Kelly. Hats off to them for a really great season. GTLM, no change there in the driver's points. Actually, there is some change because the number 24 team of Jesse Krohn and John Edwards, they will move ahead of the Corvette Racing car number 4. So it'll be 351 points for Corvette car number 3. That's Antonio Garcia and Jordan Taylor, already crowned as drivers' champions. Second place, though, will be the number 24 BMW of Jesse Krohn and John Edwards. Third in points, Oliver Gavin and Tommy Milner. And if we've got a moment in GTD, again, super tight at the front. Mario Farnbacher and Matt McMurray will win by 2 points over Ryan Hardwick and Patrick Long. So Acura over Porsche. And in the Manufacturer Championship, Acura have cemented that with the second place finish today. And Porsche, with the victory, will move ahead of Lexus, which for the second week running had just a dismal day. Everything that could go wrong did go wrong. So by my reckoning, Porsche will have 291 points. That's 10 behind Acura, but one ahead of Lexus.
Just for the sake of probity, the Michelin Endurance Cup was settled as well today. 4, 8 and 12-hour points. However, we had some at 4 sorted and some at 8 sorted, Jeremy.
Yeah, so the number 10 team, that's the consolation for this weekend, Konica Minolta Cadillac Racing, Ryan Briscoe and Renger van der Zander, they will take home the Michelin Endurance Cup over the... I need to figure that out. I need to figure that one out.
So who was second?
To be perfectly honest, I haven't done that. Second? Yeah, but Cadillac... Yeah, I'll need to figure the rest of those ones out. In the LMP2 class, Simon Trummer will win that. And again, for PR1, Simon Trummer this time, not Patrick Kelly, will win that championship. But PR1 Matheson Motorsports will win the team championship. In GTLM, where is my table? That has been clinched by the number 24 BMW. So a very good day for BMW team RLL in GTD. The championship clinched by Paul Miller Racing with a Lamborghini, and Lamborghini already had tied up the manufacturer's championship in GTD.
Thank you, Jeremy. For those of you watching the pictures on IMSA.TV, we'll take our leave of you now with the formalities about to take place. Thank you to everybody at Sebring. Wayne Estes and the crew once again have done a great job. Tyler Norling, Tyler, all you and your team, thank you for the season. Your support has been invaluable. We'll hand over the PA at Sebring now for the formalities and the presentations. So let's get into the talking points. Michelin Post Race Tech, hashtag Michelin PRT. And just a quick note for the season, I think. Let's start out with the positives, Jeremy. The season, it happened. It possibly couldn't have. At one stage, we got it up and running. A little bit of creative thinking by the tracks, by the teams, by IMSA. But we got through to a season. Finishing at Sebring felt a little bit odd. But do you know what? I quite like that.
Well, it certainly was an exciting race. I mean, it had a little bit of everything, didn't it? It had drama. It had great racing. It had super competitive fields. And it was a great day. I mean, the weather was absolutely perfect. We had a few little minor sprinkles at one stage, but that was it. And with the tropical storm having moved through not too long ago, there was fears, I think, earlier in the week that it might be super super wet and really really nasty. But it wasn't at all. The weather was perfect. A good crowd on hand. Great to see fans here at Sebring International Raceway. And I think we're all treated to a tremendous day of racing.
Shea, Adam, I'll ask you your thoughts about the season in a moment. But what a win today. A lot of people rooting for Mazda. Didn't get the 1-2, but they did win the race.
Yeah, and I can finally say this, and Harry Tinknell will thank me later because I'm sure he can still hear me. Harry, you've now won the 24 Hours of Le Mans and the 12 Hours of Sebring in the same year. Congrats. That's a pretty cool accomplishment.
He won
Le Mans earlier in the year, the second class win that he's had there in a different category. And now he's won Sebring overall. So that's not a bad year when you look back on the record book 2020 for Harry Tinknell.
Yeah, that is decent. Now, what about the season, Shea? It's been different. We've all had to work in different ways, but we've had racing. The business of racing has continued in a safe and secure way, and you've seen it firsthand from some of the tracks you've been to as how IMSA has looked after that, mentioned by Christina Nielsen in the interview with her earlier on. And obviously you've had to work with IMSA and indeed with the PRs and the teams.
Challenging season for sure. It's definitely one where the championships feel different than they have in previous seasons. I did an average finish database before this race, and the average finishes that were demonstrated so far in 2020 before the Mobile 1 12 Hours of Sebring led to a much lower average or much higher number, much lower possession that we would imagine average finish than we've seen in championships past. So perhaps these championships weren't as hardly contested as in years before that we've seen, but that doesn't mean that the guys who won the championships at the end of today aren't feeling like they haven't worked just as hard.
The rest of the IMSA championships were concluded yesterday or before, and a lot of people saying, Jeremy, how much they'd enjoyed Michelin Pilot Challenge, Porsche, Lamborghini, and indeed the prototype challenge. Having them all bar the prototype, say, at the weekend made for a very busy, fast Friday. But the Michelin Pilot Challenge going down in a couple of the classes right to the end as well. Hello, Jeremy.
Excuse me. I guess it did. Yeah, I can't remember, to be honest. There's been so much happening today, but it's been a great weekend of racing all the way around, hasn't it? Yeah, I completely agree with you. And as you say, all of the championships, all the IMSA championships, have been have featured some tremendous racing, as they always do, as we normally expect. But you know, we really just didn't know what to expect, did we, coming into this year? So it's great to see all that racing in the different series being so strong.
Right, let's get on to one or two specific questions. There is a £900 gorilla in the room, but before we get to that, I'd like to start with something that I found quite interesting from Ian McCarthy, who tweeted us at IMSA Radio Mission and PRT. He said, only negative I can find in this incredible weekend of racing is full course yellows being caused by advertising pulled onto the track. It happened a couple of times today and also in some of the support race. Surely there has to be a less intrusive way in 2020 to display it. I understand that it pays for the action, but it shouldn't be a part of it. Can't disagree with that, Jeremy, to be honest.
Amen to that.
I don't know what the answer is, Jeremy, if I'm honest.
Well, you either paint it on there or you have your boards that don't move. You put them up on the fence, secure them properly. Yeah, you know, I think, yeah.
Don't they do virtual advertising in soccer?
They do, and they do it. One of the best series that do it are the Aussie Supercars. It's also started in Formula One now. Aussie Supercars have been doing it for ages. I know that has a cost attached to it, and that would come down to production and, of course, the TV companies who take it as well. So that would be an NBC question as well. I don't think I've seen quite as much advertising as round here on or in front, Jeremy, of the conveyor belts that hold together those tyre bundles. It seemed to be more or less everywhere around the track this year, which is great news for income and revenue. But if it's going to become part of the action, there are certain places, like the exit of Turn 17, where I think you're going to have to look at that next year and say, I don't think we can have it there.
No, I think there'll be an inquest into that one. And that's really, they're going to look back at that. Someone's going to look back and say that's really not acceptable in 2020.
Right. Now, what about the big questions of this race and the last few races? It's blown up into
it. There hasn't been anything controversial, has there,
John? No, barely anything at all. It's blown up into a discussion which has gone beyond Pipo Durrani losing his cool, which I think everybody realised he did. And it's gone much beyond that into whether he was provoked, whether IMSA should have jumped on it beforehand, whether the Acuras have been bullying people all through the years. I've got lists of things that the Acura has done this year with different cars, including the number 10 as well, the Cadillac, as well as latterly the number 31 car. Matthias Longo, I believe IMSA officials used the same logic the incident for the Taylor versus Durrani to rule the Jarvis versus Dixon one. I don't think they are right, but they were under similar circumstances. That cost that 10 car a chance of the championship. I don't know what's going on with the stewards. They punish the 96 car for an incident, but they didn't punish Ricky Taylor in Petite or Jarvis today. Doesn't make sense. It's a tough one, Jeremy. We've said this before. We wouldn't like to be in the stewards' room. Inevitably, there's an element with all of these things of subjectivity about it, because you can't let the machine make make those decisions.
Yeah, I mean, I think, I don't know whether there's any underlying suggestion of bias there, because if there is, I can pretty much assure you that is not the case.
Well, there is.
Yeah, well, and there isn't, I can tell you that. There is no, yeah, I think everything is, there's nothing underhand going on there.
So when I say there's a suggestion, I'm not saying there is. There is more
indeed
than a suggestion.
Indeed.
Sorry, I should make that absolutely clear.
Indeed, no, exactly. And I'm saying, yeah, I think we can put your mind at rest that is not the factor. That is not the case here. You can certainly argue, however, that the officials have been somewhat lenient to quite a few teams. And in terms of the driver standards out there, I've certainly seem to record making quite a few comments over the last several races that, you know, I've been super surprised there haven't been penalties called. And the other times, I'm not sure I can think of anything in particular now where a penalty was called that shouldn't have been. Yeah. But I certainly think there's several that haven't been that, in my opinion, should have been. But I'm not chief steward. And the chief steward, you know, he knows all these drivers. They all know him. What they don't have these days, of course, is the same drivers meeting they've always had in the past. You know, we're in person. You know, everything is done virtually now, and that, you know, could be a factor, because, you know, face-to-face discussions and shaking hands, you know, that's just not possible in these days with
very good point.
Protocols. Yeah. Well, it is actually, yeah. But still, you can talk to them, you can talk to drivers and make your point. And we don't know, and we haven't asked because we haven't asked the question whether there have been discussions with the chief steward and any particular or in general drivers over the quality of the standard of driving. But certainly, I think, you know, I think today's incident, you talked about it, you described it perfectly, John, and earlier on when you said, you know, it had been boiling up to this. And I think you're right. And I think that could have been the boiling point, I believe, could have been and probably should have been, and perhaps they tried to do to bring that down to make sure everybody was on the same page going into the races, because, you know, clearly Pipo Durrani said, okay, well, if you're after Petit Le Mans, okay, if that's the way you want to race, that's the way I'll race. Well, that to me is not acceptable, because this is motor racing. This is not fisticuffs out the back, where, you know, you're gonna like the old NASCAR days, where, you know, if something went wrong, then you brought it up face to face and fist to fist. But you don't do that with racing cars, because that's just totally unacceptable. And I think Pipo Durrani, he clearly got rattled by when he made that move down into turn seven, ran wide, the Acura went back through and kind of sideswiped him as he came back on a racetrack. But that's up to, at that point, Durrani has made the move. He's gone in too deep. He's off the racetrack. It's up to him to rejoin safely, and he didn't do that. He then made contact with the, I think it was number six car at that stage,
the
Acura that went on past. So that's, you know, you're off the racetrack. You're the one who's got to rejoin safely. He didn't do that, and then a lap later, the red mist really came down, and he, you know, he just took out the leader, which is again unacceptable. So that penalty, in my mind, is absolutely justified.
The only thing, and I said this in commentary, and I'll say that the same here, the only thing I'll say is, and you brought it up, is, you know, if that's, as people said, if we're being told to race people how you want to be raced, that's how they want to race, therefore they've got to be prepared to take it back. I'm paraphrasing what he said there. A lot of people harking back to, not just Petit Le Mans, and the Taylor Durrani incident at turn six, but also then what happened between Felipe Nasr and Helio Castro Neves, WeatherTech Raceway Laguna Seca, where coming out in free practice two, at the start of their laps of free practice two, there was an altercation on track between Nasr, who crossed the white line in front of the Acura that was already on its first flying lap. And then Helio decided to pull across in front. I don't think, and Jeremy said this at the time, I don't think Helio meant to hit the 31 Cadillac, but he did. And that was dangerous. And he gets parked for 60 seconds in a free practice session. And a lot of people saying that wasn't an appropriate punishment for that. And it just allowed things to boil up. You know, that then starts to look like, you know, people staring. You had Montoya staring after he got the pole position, trying to stare the guys down and giving them a stink eye. You had the incident with the second car today, which was trying to defend the lead to help its teammate. Of course it was. You know, it just boils up and gets to a situation where at that point, I'm not saying this is the situation, but it could be seen that the officials have lost control at that point.
Yeah, no, I would agree with that. And the visualization from the outside definitely isn't good. A little bit on what Jeremy said in terms of not being able to have the face-to-face discussions.
That's a very good point.
as you would. I think a huge aspect of racing that's been lost this year, and it really has been underestimated, is Marion's. And we talk about it a lot, but the fact of the matter is, when you walk into Marion's tent, if you eat there, it doesn't matter what team you're with outside of the tent, you sit with whoever you want to sit with. And people settle scores over coffees and cookies plates of pasta. We haven't had that this year. And I was told the other day by one of the teams involved in that scuffle that we had at WeatherTech Raceway Laguna Seca, there was a behind doors discussion and apology issued by one of the drivers involved. That did happen. Just because it happened, it doesn't mean it was publicized and doesn't mean that all the ill will feelings are gone, but it was a step back in the right direction. But the sheer fact that we don't have that neutral ground to go to for the drivers anymore to have their discussions, I think that's a really dangerous situation.
And I agree with that. And we've seen it happen in the past with other officiating teams in IMSA. We had a couple of GT cars balled up at WeatherTech Raceway Laguna Seca with something that had been going on for a little while as well. I think there are extenuating circumstances with not having everybody together and everybody living in their own bubble. It becomes, sadly, more like some Formula races where people don't mix. That's not the sports car way, Jeremy. And I think that point that you made and Shay's just made there is very important, that we tend to mix together. When we don't mix together, you get caught up in a little echo chamber of your own team and everything that's going on. And that can amplify feelings, good or bad.
Yeah, no question. And you know, that situation could or would have, could have or should have been de-escalated, I believe, particularly after that incident at WeatherTech Raceway Laguna Seca, because that was, again, unacceptable. And I would have thought that Castroneves was kind of hauled up before the beak there and talked to by the chief steward. And again, you're bad for me because I didn't follow up on that. But that was an absolutely unacceptable thing that happened. And to be parked for a minute, like you suggested there, means absolutely nothing in a practice session. And
I know
you said
that.
At the time,
I'll be honest,
it should have been parked for at least for the day, if not for the race meeting. And I don't disagree at all. And particularly with the way the tensions had been rising, they needed to do something much more than what they did. They just gave them a sort of tickle on the wrist.
Well, we've seen teams in the past that have lost the first 10 minutes of a session for not handing that data stick in or for getting out of that pit box too early or whatever. And you've got somebody who's, you know, on the face of it, whether he meant to hit the car or not, has deliberately driven into that car and doesn't get a penalty that affects him at all. And I think that those kind of things rankle and they grow and they get blown out of proportion on that. Something that needs to be looked at. Excuse me for a moment. Excuse me. And this is not necessarily a criticism of Bo Barfield, who's the effectively the chief steward of that. But you know, Bo puts a lot of trust in the drivers, Jeremy, when he says, "Race the way you want to be raced." Unfortunately, I think what we've seen this year is that some of them, not all of them, can't be trusted to do that. Well, if that's the case, you've got to then start treat them like seventh graders again. You've got to then stamp it out and let people know that it's not acceptable. That's sad for Bo because that's not the way he wants to officiate. But unfortunately, when you get to a championship, the last two and a bit hours of that race tonight was ruined by something that should have been stopped some time ago. Ruined. Yeah. And it affected the championship. And I can't be right. That's me. I'm just now soapbox, just putting that over there. Thank you for all the kind words. Benny Carillos, interesting point from Gearbox Girl. Worked in hospitality for 11 years. Totally see people hashing things out over breakfast, lunch or dinner. I don't think that could be underestimated, that personal contact that both Shay and Jeremy talked about. Alan Prosser, re-advertising. especially in places where the cameras don't see it. It's just no, really. No to CGI. I've stopped watching supercars because it looks terrible and wiggles around on the screen. It does, in fairness. Peter Croft, I'll say it, closing the season and deciding the championships at Sebring was awesome. It did work, Jeremy, didn't it? We didn't know. It did work. I said necessity, the mother of invention. it's the way it's worked out this year. We've had some strange-looking calendar, but we end up at Sebring and decide the championships. It worked really well.
Well, it did. You know, we had two races at Sebring, two races at Daytona. Lots of question marks raised about that. Then we're going to race on the Roval at Charlotte. But they've all been good races, and particularly the Charlotte one. I think that was a real surprise because, it was tremendous. It was a short, sharp shootout, which is great. We normally have that at Long Beach and or Detroit, so they weren't available to us this year. Mm. So that was a great call, and certainly you want Mobile One 12 Hours of Sebring to be a big event, and having it as a championship finale worked absolutely perfectly too. So yeah, it's been a great way to round things out.
And on the same subject, Dave Alcock has said, simply a triumph over the most difficult circumstances, losing so much the season. We did get a full season. We got great races. And the improvised events were fabulous entertainment, including the shorter races at some of the traditional venues. And they did work as well. I mean, come on, 4th of July race, it wasn't meant to run into the darkness, but it did because of the weather. I think that if we do that again, it should run in there. Evokes the old Paul Revere races, sports car races of the past. And you get on 4th of July, not just 4th of July weekend, on Saturday, the 4th of July, you get Corvette winning their 100th race, literally under the Rockets' red glare. I mean, it worked so well.
It was definitely one of those nights that if you're a sports car racing fan, you're going to remember for a long time, just because there was so much emotion. I'm not gonna hold you to that, John. But even the Charlotte Roval, when we had the rain and everybody was talking about how wonderful the Xfinity and the Cup races were, except for the NASCAR fans who were talking about those cool sporty cars that were going around before, that was pretty fun. So I did appreciate the influence that we had this year and the extra reach, because that was certainly unexpected.
Thanks to Liam Harrow for the kind words. And don't forget, Liam, it's not just Shea, Jeremy and myself. There's a big team behind on the IMSA side with the guys who make sure it can be heard at the track, which is remarkable when I can hear that coming back through the PA. The guys at Charlotte and, of course, Tim Gray, Curry, Rob and Hugh down in London. Josh Barrett says, right, is that Mazda Motorsport's first big endurance race since 1991? Define big, Josh, because they had a pretty interesting summer last year when they won, was it three on the bounce? But if you're talking about, Le Mans, Petit Le Mans, Rolex, Daytona 24 Hours and... Watkins Glen 6 hours, and the Sebring Mobile One 12 hours. I'd have to look it up, but I think Shea and Jeremy, I don't think they took one of the big enduros last year, did they? Oh yes, of course they
won. Watkins.
They won
last
Watkins
year.
Glen. There you go. Do you call that, Josh? I'll put that back to you. Do you call that one of the big races? Watkins Glen 6 hours has a lot of history in the USA. Yeah. It might not be Le Mans.
The big three traditionally in sports car racing, I think, have been Le Mans, particularly from the North American perspective, certainly would have been Le Mans, the Rolex 24 Daytona, and the Sebring 12 Hours. There's other big sports car events in the world, the Spa 1000Ks, all that sort of stuff, and others over the years, but generally, those are the three big events, aren't they? So, from that perspective, comment.
Rob, our tech in London, waits until we're in Mission and Post-Race Tech to remind me, and I did know this, but I put it to the back of my mind. Mazda 40 years ago in 1980 won the GTU class at Sebring for the first time in with an RX-7. And he couldn't have told me that through through the race itself. Let's wrap this up with some final thoughts from my two co-commentators for what we have seen over the last few weeks, months, and particularly since we came back. And actually, I think more, Jeremy, to look forward to 2020. Some big changes on the horizon in terms of teams and manufacturers and personnel. But if IMSA and sports car racing in the US can weather the storm of this year, surely anything 2021 throws at it, we can deal with.
Yeah, fair comment. You know, it's we go back to the traditional schedule for next year, so we're kind of used to that, the way the flow of that schedule will be back to, we hope, normal with a return to places like Long Beach and Detroit and all those events. And of course, July 4th, we were talking about a little while ago, we're going to be at Canadian Tire Motorsport Park in July if all goes well. So certainly looking forward to that. But for the teams and drivers and manufacturers, yeah, there's going to be a lot of shuffling around next season. But I think everything is sounding pretty positive.
Great.
We might lose a DPI car or two, perhaps, and we don't really know what's going to go on with LMP2. But you know, the LMP2 races we've had this year have been good, apart from the last one where only one car made the trip all the way out west. That was unfortunate. But you know, given the pandemic was also always going to affect a category like LMP2 harder than the professional classes and even GTD, I think. But it's still, we've had some great races, I think, in LMP2. So that's been great fun. And of course, next year we're going to have LMP3 added into the mix. I'm not convinced that three prototype classes is the answer, but GTLM's still question marks there. You know, if we've only got two cars plus the odd one here and there, and maybe the odd privateer to mix up against the Corvettes, you know, I don't really see the point in that, to be honest. So there's certainly lots of question marks. There's lots of I's to be dotted and T's to be crossed. But I'm certainly excited for the prospects for 2021 already.
Yeah, I really hope they don't try to balance GT Le Mans and GT3. That to me, bite the bullet and get rid of GT Le Mans. The problem with that is that you would lose Corvette, and I understand the commercial reasons behind that. Can you make the GT Le Mans car a GT3 car? Is it backwards compatible? Corvette say yes, they probably could, but you know, then you get yourself in a world of trouble for that. Plus, it means that they don't get any practice racing their GT Le Mans car before they go to Le Mans. And does that mean Corvette don't go to Le Mans? Because that would be a shame as well. Something has to be done. GT Le Mans is working well, particularly on the amateur side, with the biggest entry of any category at Le Mans being the GT AM, the GTE AM. The European Le Mans series has been good with the GT AM cars as well.
That's because there aren't GT3 cars, are there, at Le Mans 24
hours? No, and let's hope there never are. Really, I don't want to see GT3 at Le Mans for the... We're getting off track a bit here.
Right. Well, only so far as the cost of running a GT3 against a GT LM or GTE, I think, is pretty substantial. And that is a factor, I think.
Except GT3s don't have technical regulations. It's a full balance of performance. So you can turn up with everything and stick it in. And what you will do, as soon as you add Le Mans into that, somebody will build a special. And look at the hassle that we had with Ford building a special to win Le Mans with the Ford GT. Good luck to them. You know, they did it within the regulations, but at least there are technical regulations, and they still needed a waiver because they hadn't produced the road cars. If you do that in GT3, where it's more wide open, you will actually do no good to GT3 as a category.
I'm not advocating taking GT3 to Le Mans at all.
No.
I'm just saying that, if you... For privateers to run GT LM cars over here, that's what I was kind of referring to. Well, so the cost of that is a lot more than running a GT Daytona car.
Oh, absolutely agree. And the other problem is not all the manufacturers make the cars available. You know, Porsche haven't made the new 19 cars available in the States. Corvette haven't made their cars available. All right, that's the first year. BMW hasn't made their car available. So what have you got left with? You've got Aston Martin and Ferrari. Well, Ferrari have made their cars available, and we might get one next year. Aston Martin don't want to pay the manufacturer levy to get the car into the championship, which, you know, do you want to sell cars? Do you not want to sell cars?
They're in the GTD.
Well, that's true. Yeah, that is true. They are in GTD now. So I wonder if that would carry across. Jeremy, thank you very much. I'll let you get away. Shea, finish off with some thoughts for you and some positivity for 2021. Some good new stuff coming along with a couple of new teams taking on the prototype Acuras, with a couple of teams taking on the GTD Acuras. We've got the new Porsche Carrera Cup North America. So plenty to look forward to for 2021.
Yeah, and 2021 begins tomorrow. As a matter of fact, with teams taking delivery of their new cars Sunday morning, bright and early. We're only a couple hours away from that. It's kind of crazy to think that just because this season has ended, it doesn't necessarily mean we have to wait, what did you say, 9 weeks for the roar before the 24?
Yeah, exactly.
There's a lot that's going to be happening. And to be perfectly honest, I'm not convinced that what we've seen today is completely done. I'm going to wait until I see the final results because I'm notoriously bad at math. But I believe a couple of the drive times were slightly off, and that could have a knock-on effect on perhaps a championship or two.
Shea Adam and Jeremy Shaw were joining me for the final Michelin Port Race Tech of the season, and that just about does it for IMSA for 2020. What a season it's been. But we have the Haggerty 25th hour on Monday at 1 o'clock Eastern, 6 o'clock UK. We have some great guests getting lined up, including some that have championship implications as well from the WEC and from IMSA. Thank you to all the team. Too many people to thank, but a special personal thank you to me, to all of my co-commentators, and of course to the responsible adult who does all the hard commercial work that means that you've had all of this IMSA 2020 season all free without blocks or breaks. Thanks very much. See you on Monday, and then on Midweek Motorsport on Wednesday. Good night.
This program is a Radio Show Limited production.
Tell your friends there's more at RadioLeMans.com.